Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Korach. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Korach. There is a handout for this podcast, which I'm going to send as the next transmission in the podcast channel, so please use it to study alongside Rabbi David Levenkreuz. Rabbi Levenkreuz is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. In this week's parasha, we read about the exciting altercation that takes place between Korach and Moshe. And certainly, when you look at it on a pshat level, it's very, very hard to tell what Korach did that was so wrong. He seems to be arguing for the democratization of the Jewish people. And in fact, the sages and others have got to spend a lot of time trying to work out what he did wrong. We have midrashim about it. Many, many people use this almost as a way to project onto the text anything that they think is wrong and they think is bad. And of course, we have the famous statement in Pirkei Avot, comparing between a machloket l'shem shamayim, an argument for the sake of heaven, which is the argument of Hillel and Shammai, and a machloket shelo l'shem shamayim, a machloket that is not for the sake of heaven, and Korach is the prototype of this kind of argument. In general, it seems to be that the way that the sages and others go is that Korach's motivations were wrong, and as a result of his motivations being wrong, what he said was wrong too. But lurking behind a text like this, an unasked question or a suspicion that could be placed into one's mind is it legitimate to argue with authority, with religious authority at all? And we know that many, many traditional religious societies are very, very much based upon fiat, upon a strong leader who is listened to, or a strong system that is obeyed. And the question really is, to what extent does a person who is not in the religious leadership have the ability, the duty, the right, the privilege to argue with those in authority? That is the issue that I would like to look at today. And as we will see, Korach comes up in this discussion as one of the examples. Let's start off with the Braita in Brachot, Kaf Zayin Amud Bet, the first one on your source sheet, Va'atanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Rabbi Eliezer says, and he's now going to give a list of things that are prohibited. Hamit palel acharei rabo, somebody who prays behind their rabbi. V'hanoten shalom l'rabo, and who greets their rabbi, says hello to their rabbi. V'amachzir shalom l'rabo, or returns a greeting. I find it hard to find out so far what is so wrong about what doing any of these things. V'hacholek al yeshivato shel rabo, he argues against the position or the sitting of his rabbis. V'aomer devar shelo shama mipi rabo, and says something that he did not hear directly from his rabbi. What happens? Gorem l'shchina shetistalek meYisrael, causes the divine presence to leave the people of Israel. Very, very strong language. And I think we have a lot of immediate problems with the text. First of all, some of them, it's not clear what the matter with them is. But on an even deeper level, I think what we have here is a very, very powerful form of social control. The rabbis wrote the laws, and looking at the text from a sociological or an anthropological perspective, it seems as if what they are saying is, don't mess with us. We're the ones who control. There's no place for creativity. You can't have your own opinions. And it seems very, very much, if we read it back to Korach, that the very act of Korach disagreeing with Moshe was wrong, regardless of what he said or what his motivations were. Let's look at a little bit in detail, and we're going to focus on the last part of the Baraita, but we're going to look at the first part anyway. Rashi says that you shouldn't pray behind your rabbi, because this is an example of Yehura, of vanity, of holier-than-thouness, because you look equal and you should stay a certain distance. You shouldn't greet your teacher, because you should wait for your teacher to greet you first. Neither should you return a greeting. Rashi says this is that you should not greet your rabbi as you would greet an ordinary person. You shouldn't say, hi, rabbi, or even good morning, rabbi. But instead, you should say, shalom alecha, Rebbe. The formal greeting, peace be unto you, my rabbi, my teacher. Well, so far, it might be a different sociological context, a different social context to what we have today. But these are forms of respect. And we can understand how a society might want to have their religious leaders have a form of respect. But let's look at the other two, because I think those are more germane and more relevant to what we're looking at. Cholek al yeshivato is somebody who challenges the academy of his rabbi, who takes issue or disagrees, and saying something that you did not hear from their rabbi certainly seems to say that you should only say, you should only repeat what you've learned. So now let's try and unpack these statements. Let's try and see what they mean and what relevance they have to the very important issue we have today of arguing with those in authority. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, in Talmud Torah 5:2, says, Eze hu cholek al rabo. He wants to define what we have in the Gemara. Who is the one who argues with their rabbi? Ze shekoveh lo midrash, the one who establishes for him a study house, v'yoshev v'doresh v'melamed, and sits and explains and teaches. The Rambam defines arguing with the academy not necessarily as disagreeing, not necessarily as saying that you think what your rabbi is saying is incorrect, but opening one's own yeshiva and teaching, starting one's own association, starting one's own institute. Again, this doesn't seem so bad. You know, the more yeshivas, the more Torah. What is wrong with having another institution? Again, it looks like a powerful form of social control. The rabbis don't want anybody to be taking issue. They don't want any rivals going on. But certainly it narrows what we've read in the Gemara, in that it's not disagreeing with the rabbi per se, only establishing one's own school. Why is this wrong? The Ber Heitev in Yoreh Deah, this is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Bach, says, Hatam katava Bach, the Bach says, Dekevan shehu koveh lo midrash v'yoshev v'doresh u melamed, that since he is establishing by the very act of establishing a study house, is arguing against his rabbi's authority. So it might be all right to disagree with him privately or to share something, but the moment you open up a rival school, this is saying, hey, wait a minute, there's something wrong with the school that I came from, and I am teaching something different. One of the things we need to remember, which is very important, is that a lot of these were written in, not the later ones, but the earlier texts like the Gemara. And these ideas were written in a context where people were learning in study houses, repeating the views of their rabbis. There wasn't as much stuff written down. Very, very often people would learn only their own rabbi's Torah and not know from other houses. So, you know, opening up another house, another Bet Midrash, was somehow saying that the Mesorah, the tradition that I received from my rabbi, was not sufficient. But again, the question is begged, what is so wrong with arguing with one's rabbis? Sanhedrin, the Gemara Sanhedrin, Kuf Yud, Amud Aleph, Amar Rav Chista says, Kol ha-cholek al rabo ke-cholek al hashchina. If you're arguing with one's rabbi, it's as if you are arguing with the divine presence in some very, very powerful, mystical way. Rabbis and teachers are seen as representative of the divine presence. They are somehow the Shechina in this world. In Jewish life, one doesn't have the same idea of a priest or a minister as you have in some Christian sects where you're called, where you receive a calling, where you're inspired. Somebody can just learn and become a rabbi because it's something that they're interesting and they like and they have an affinity to. But once one does that, you're not just a regular Joe. Once one does this, somehow by taking this mantle upon yourself, one on a personal level is expected to represent God. One is seen as representing God. And according to this, arguing against with one's rabbi is mamash like arguing against God. Again, taking this back to the Korach story, which is what we're basing ourselves upon, this would seem to say that the very act of Korach arguing was something incorrect. And in proof that arguing against one's rabbi is like arguing against God, there's a pasuk, not in our week's parasha, but about Korach, where it says, Datan and Aviran were the communal leaders who led a revolution against Moshe and Aaron as part of Korach's rebellion against God. Behatzotam, be'edat Korach, behatzotam al Adonai, al Hashem, as part of Korach's rebellion against God. In other words, Korach's rebellion against Moshe and Aaron was seen as being against God. Why? If we look at number 6, Amru Chachamim Morei Ravcha K'Morei Shamayim, the sages said, and the Rambam quotes, fear of one's rabbi is like fear of heaven. The rabbi is the one who teaches you Torah. The rabbi is the one who brings you to Mount Sinai. The rabbi is the one who gives you meaning and direction in life, and therefore a certain awe is expected, the same way as we have an awe of God. Okay, so far, so fundamentalist. We have a system, we have rabbis who represent God, we can't argue with them. Arguing with them is seen as a form of rebellion. Certainly opening up a house of study seems to be prohibited. It's unclear whether perhaps a gentle disagreement is permitted or not permitted. And so far, so good or so bad, depending on what your opinion is. But in the Bi'ur HaGra, another commentary on Yored De'ah, we see that the Yored De'ah says very gingerly, become, you know, perhaps in the height of understatement, become a mekomot matzinu, shehayu cholkim al avihem v'rabam. We find in a number of places that people would argue with their fathers and rabbis. Oh my goodness. I mean, if we're talking about a tradition that is packed with argument, this must be, you know, the height of, you know, reserve to say, you know, in a few places people did argue with their rabbi. And this is, if we look at number 8, the Pitchei Tshuva says it a little bit more robustly. B'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, lo nimne'u, they did not hesitate. Lasig al gdolim shelifnehem, people did not hesitate to argue with the great people who lived before them. And it's fascinating, if any of you have read Sherwood Wine, he was a very controversial figure, a rabbi who was also an atheist, who started a school for secular Judaism. He claims something very, very interesting. And that is, he says that there were always two Judaisms. A very, very interesting theory. That there were always two Judaisms. There was the elite Judaism of the rabbis and of the learned people that emphasized obedience, that emphasized doing what the law says. And there were the rest, the real people, who were argumentative, who were disagreed, who were cynical, who were sarcastic. If we think of traditional, at least Ashkenazi, Jewish humor, he would use this as a proof that, you know, the Jewish people were not always as obedient as we can see. And what very, very often he would claim happens in a text is that the two come together. You have a system that wants to emphasize obedience, but that's just not the way people are built, and therefore we have machloket in the system. I don't know if he's right or wrong. I also don't know if I've stated it 100% accurately. But I think this idea of a struggle between obedience and argument, between conformity and free thinking, is something very, very powerful. And the Bi'ur HaGra and the Pitchei Tshuva are saying this in black and white. Listen, Mr. Texts and Ms. Texts, the sociological reality is different. And then what we see And now what we see is something very, very typical of what texts will do, of what Jewish law will do, and that is it doesn't reject the original statement, but it narrows it as much as it can in order to allow other values to come forward. That way, one maintains both values. In Sanhedrin, Hey Amud Bet, Gazru, Talmid al Yoreh Ele Im Ken Notel Rashut Marabo. There was a gezeira that a student cannot teach unless they have permission from their rabbis. This is where smicha, rabbinic ordination, comes from. All that rabbinic ordination is in traditional Jewish life is permission from one's rabbi to go out to teach and also to rule. You can give lectures. In other words, it seems to be saying that the rabbi has the power to give you his or her blessing and say, you go ahead, teach, start an academy without me, make decisions about halakha without me. That's how Sanhedrin deals with it. But the Ramah, the Ashkenazi the commentator on the Shulchan Aruch, goes a little further, and in number 10, we read, Avol mutar lo lachloch achlav be'ez psak, or hora'ah. It's permitted to argue with him on a specific decision, or hora'ah, or teaching, im yesh lo rayot v'hochachot lidvarav shehadin imo, if you have straight that the law is with you. In other words, says the Ramah, in number 10, you are allowed to argue and disagree with one's rabbi, but it has to be on the basis of knowledge and familiarity with texts. It cannot be for ulterior motives like Korach. Neither can it be for good motives, but without being based on the tradition. In other words, we're allowed to ask questions, but if we seriously want to challenge the system, we have to become part of it. You have to walk the walk, talk the talk, learn the language, and once you're able to do that, then you can indeed become part of the tradition and part of the challenging of the tradition. And this works very, very well for rabbis. But what happens if I'm not a rabbi, just a learned person? Rambam Hilchot Talmud Torah Yud Aleph says something even narrower. He says, "V'al yomar dvar shelo shema mirabo." Don't say something you haven't heard from your rabbi. Ad sheyaskir shem omro, until you say the name of the person you heard it from. We know that there is an idea of omer dvar b'shem omro mevi geula leolam. Somebody who says something in the name of the person who said it brings redemption to the world. So we know anyway it's a good thing to do. Reb Yonah and the Rosh says you cannot say something you have never heard from your Torah teacher in the name of your Torah teacher. And the Shach goes even further and says, nowadays we assume that people speak in their own names. So it's not so serious if you say something not in the name of your rabbi, but still you should be careful. This is the narrowest interpretation. And I think this also opens up the idea that these texts are not only referring to rabbis, but also an educated layperson who has something to say, can with respect respond to a rabbi, agree with the rabbi, suggest their own ideas. And I said earlier that what the narrowing does is it allows new values to or other values to come to the fore while keeping the original values. And I think this is a perfect example. The rules of respect and deference to rabbis make sure that the establishment and the Mesorah, the unbroken chain of tradition, are not destroyed. You need permission. You need to act with deference. You need to use texts. You need to either be very much a part of the system, or if you're not part of the system, you need to do it with care. On the other hand, the establishment can react and respond to legitimately couched challenges. And in fact, one of the most important aspects of the halachic checks and balances is precisely an educated laity who is able to understand if what rabbis can do is justified. This is one of the ways that the system stops itself from getting too much control. There's a very, very important idea that we may listen to the rabbis, but we are the ones who choose who to be the rabbis. And this is needed in both ways, to make sure that a rabbi does not go off to the edge in being too liberal, being too small-c conservative. What we need is an educated laity. For me, this is not a plug for Pardes, but for me, one of the most powerful things that happens at Pardes is not so much that we provide leaders for the Jewish people, I'm talking about professional leaders, but also that we create lay people who know a lot about Judaism, people who have vision in order to be able to get knowledge and then to become part of the process. For me, being a rabbi, I'm a rabbi, is a very, very powerful zchut. It's a very, very great privilege, but I see it as no greater than being an educated layperson who goes upon their life, living their life, lives in the real world, and is able to challenge, disagree, reinforce the rabbi, and who's able to bring the particular knowledge that they have for being in the, inverted commas, real world to the process. And so let us hope that we can create a Jewish society which is filled with challenge, filled with disagreement, filled with lots of different people thinking their own ways, but that we should not be like Korach, that we should do it with the right motivations and based upon the sources in front of us. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.